Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI calls for an intensified cooperation to build an alliance between man and the environment. An environmentally committed bishop in Australia responds to that call and tells us what we can do to reconnect with creation. And a courageous group of exiled radio broadcasters from Zimbabwe keep the independent voice of their countrymen sounding out strong. Climate change is with us. 10 years ago, it was conjecture. Now the future is unfolding before our eyes. Indigenous people in Canada see it in disappearing Arctic ice and permafrost. The shantytown dwellers of Latin America and Southern Asia see it in lethal storms and floods. Europeans see it in disappearing glaciers, forest fires, and fatal heat waves. Scientists see it in tree rings, ancient coral and bubbles trapped in ice cores. These reveal that the world has not been as warm as it is now for a millennium or more, and we are responsible for it. Yes, climatologists agree that people are causing climate change by burning nature's vast stores of coal, oil, and natural gas, releasing billions of tons of carbon dioxide, that's CO2, into the atmosphere every year. Pope Benedict XVI is very aware of the problem, and he's making it part of his mission to get the message across. Just last Sunday, the Pope reiterated his plea that an alliance be recreated between humanity and the environment, urging cooperation for the promotion of common good.
Auspico che da parte di tutti si intensifichi la cooperazione al fine di promuovere il bene comune.
My hope is that cooperation may intensify on the part of everyone with the aim of promoting common good, development, and the safeguard of creation, so that the alliance between humanity and the environment is strengthened, becoming the mirror of God's creating love, from which we all originate and towards which we are all journeying.
The Pope's words came on the 20th anniversary of the Montreal Protocol, a document that 2 decades ago established the objectives and measures for the reduction of the production and use of substances that threaten the ozone layer. Notwithstanding, scientists say the Earth has probably never warmed as fast as in the past 30 years, a period when natural influences on global temperatures, such as solar cycles and volcanoes, should have cooled us down. And ocean studies suggest there's more warming in the pipeline. And as climatologists, scientists and journalists right across the spectrum raise their voices in warning, the Catholic Church is also gathering its forces to fight the battle to save the world. But what has been its contribution so far? Or even better, has there been a Catholic contribution to the environmental movement?
Well, there has, but I mean, it's still in its early days in one respect, when you think about it. Catholic Earth Care Australia is only 5 years old.
Bishop Christopher Toohey of the Diocese of Wilcannia-Forbes is the chair of Catholic Earth Care Australia, an ecological agency established by the Australian Catholic Bishops' Conference.
So from that structural point of view, we're still at very early days. But when you think from the theological perspective and the philosophical one, the Catholic Church has spoken about the creation and the dignity of creation right way, way, way back. Even St. Augustine referred to the creation as a book without words.
That's God's book without words, of course. And Bishop Tuhi believes that to be able to really start caring for creation, each and every one of us needs to connect with the universe, a capacity that many of us seem to have lost.
I believe that we have lost a sense of our part in the scheme of things. I mean, we're so focused on production and consumption of what we produce, we've lost a sense of the uniqueness of this planet, its place in the universe, our commission by the Creator to care for it. In other words, we've become rather inward-looking rather than outward-looking. Now, obviously, where I come from in the outback of Australia, I can't help but look out because at night time the universe literally feels like it's falling on your shoulders. It's just so obvious. But in big cities, I'm here in London at the moment, that sense of the immensity and the wonder of it all, you know, it's hard to get a handle on it for people who actually live in an environment like this. And I just believe it's crucially important, not only for the welfare of the natural environment, but for ourselves, for our own spirit, to find ways back to this connection.
So the starting point in our commitment to save the earth, says Bishop Tuhi, is actually very simple and has a lot to do with being humble.
The definition of humility is being grounded, because humility comes from the Latin word for soil. I was only thinking about this the other day. You know, we see at Lent, and you put the ashes on a person's head on Ash Wednesday. Remember, you are dust, and unto dust you shall return. I mean, these are profound insights that the Church has had for 2,000 years. And we're not the only ones. The Jewish people have a sense for this too, you know, very powerfully with the connection with the book of Genesis. And I just suspect, and I don't want to be sounding too judgmental, but I suspect, generally speaking, those connections are just not there in the ordinary daily life of people in large cities.
But many would argue that most people in large cities are just too busy. They have to brave the traffic to get to work, do the shopping, raise the children, pay the bills, pay the mortgage. That the 24 hours a day provides is just too brief a time to even consider taking a walk in the countryside and reconnecting with creation.
I don't mean that they have to actually physically do that, because it may not be possible for them, but there are parks and there are flower pots, you know. People put flowers on the table and they may have a little garden, even if they live in a block of units, the flats. I've seen in Rome, you know, little window boxes with flowers in it. I'm not saying that this connection with the natural world has to be the same for everybody. My environment back home in Australia is very different to someone living in Rome, for example, or here in London. But right now we're driving past some absolutely magnificent trees. I think they're oak trees. I'm not sure. I'm not a great expert on plants. And the grass is there right beside us, and we're right next to Hyde Park. Now, you can just literally be blind to these things in the rush to get to work. It's a kind of a discipline that we've got to rediscover. If we're people who are only prisoners of our circumstances, and I think that in itself is telling you something about how far down the slope we've gone.
And that takes us straight back to Pope Benedict's words and his exhortation to strengthen the alliance between man and the environment.
We need a religious conversion, not just an ethical one. It is about reconnecting with the person who gave us this wonderful gift and the privilege of life itself. I certainly didn't ask for it. I didn't ask to be born, that's for sure. So it is really important that we get back in touch and shake hands with the person who gave us life. It is a religious conversion, not just an ethical one. It's a thing of the heart, not just mind, although both are important.
So, what's needed is that the mind and the heart come together and work towards some very practical results. And that's where the Catholic Church can operate on many levels, says Bishop Tuhi, starting with the local parish priest.
Practically, for example, it's important to get in touch with science. In other words, what is the best of our knowledge telling us about this world that we're in now, in terms of what we're doing to it? Now, you might say, oh, well, that's not a parish priest's job. I disagree. I think that is a parish priest's job. If he's a leader in that community, surely to goodness he needs to know what's the truth about what's happening to our planet. If he's just a follower, well, fair enough. But if he claims to be a leader, surely he needs to be in touch with that. And then to help people to make the connection between what the science is telling us and what our faith perspective is. And I think that's a very, very wonderful vocation. It's just that we didn't know we were going to be doing this when we were ordained. Even 5 years ago, I didn't know I'd be doing this. I didn't grow up with a strong love for environmentalism, if you want to call it that. I only got this job 5 years ago in Catholic Earth Care Australia. Well, I helped to found it. And I've only been a bishop for 6. So I didn't know that I was in for this. I've been ordained 25 years now. When I walked into the cathedral on my ordination day, I had no idea what I was in for. If I do it the way I did it 25 years ago, well, I'm not going to be speaking to the circumstances we're in now. So I think parish priests have to do it. It's not a case of them saying, oh, well, it's just, someone else's job. Not if they're leaders.
And getting back to the urgent problem of climate change, the bottom line is that we will need to cut CO2 emissions by 70 to 80% simply to stabilise atmospheric CO2 concentrations and thus temperatures and disastrous climatic consequences. It's a daunting task, a task that, as Pope Benedict says, needs the cooperation and collaboration of everyone in order to bear fruit.
There's two partnerships that have to happen. One is with the civil authorities and the other is with the scientific community. I'm trying to do both. Oh, and the third one is with the other great religions. Personally, that's what I am trying to do. I think it's just so, so crucial. And when you look at it, something that's threatening us in the way that climate change is should call for a united action, shouldn't it? We cross all sorts of divides, religious and political and social, when we're under severe threat. And that's typical in, say, in war situation or in my own country when there's a bushfire. No one asks your politics or your religion or anything else when the bushfire is coming towards your farm at 60 miles per hour. So I think that the circumstances themselves are forging a kind of, well, maybe I'm speaking idealistically, and I suppose I am, but I think the circumstances are forging a new sense of unity amongst people. And we can, in the Catholic Church, even though we're not the majority of people on the face of the planet, but we still are a significant player, and we have a lot to offer, and we have a rich tradition, theological and spiritual, and of course we have our faith. But it's important that we talk to scientists. As a matter of fact, they are the very last words that Pope John Paul II said to me personally as I was leaving the room, about 6 or so months before he died. Very important you talk to scientists, he said. I'll never forget that. What I would say is that I'm very hopeful. Sometimes I think that the whole news about what's happening to us is so bad, and it is bad news, don't worry about that, that it can leave people sort of powerless and feeling a bit depressed. But I'm actually very hopeful that we can get this sorted and avoid the worst of what climate change would otherwise bring. Because at first, for the first 3 years of Catholic Earth Care Australia, I felt like it was bashing your head against the wall, as we say. But the last 2 years, or especially even in the last 18 months, the whole thing has just accelerated. We're flat out keeping up now with the inquiries they get and the people asking us in the media what's going on and so on. The interest is sort of accelerating, snowballing, so to speak. And I know that people in industry and in government are lining up to look at how we can get this sorted out. So I'm very, very hopeful and quite confident, actually, that we will end up by avoiding the worst of what otherwise would have befallen us. So I think it's really important that we give people a sense of hope. And that in itself is infidelity to the spirit of the gospel. The Lord is with us in this whole deal.
If you listen to my programs regularly, you know that climate change is one of my top concerns. It's not the only one, though, especially when I read news items telling of children as young as 7 who feel the need to flee their countries to survive. The news item I'm referring to regards Zimbabwe in southern Africa, where economic crisis, hunger, and the impact of AIDS are pushing groups of hungry, tired, and often orphaned children to cross the dangerous border with South Africa in hope of food, work, or schooling. Probably this news is particularly hard-hitting because it's children we're talking about. In actual fact, millions of Zimbabweans have left their homes in the country that was once regarded as a beacon of democracy and prosperity in Africa. Those left are faced with a daily struggle with hunger and poverty and living in fear of a government that has become a brutal dictatorship. I decided to find out more from a Zimbabwean exile herself, someone who is keeping the independent voice of Zimbabwe alive as she broadcasts to her countrymen on shortwave radio from a secluded location in London. The only way to do so, as the government of Robert Mugabe does not tolerate any voice that is different to its own.
My name is Jerry Jackson, and I'm the station manager and founder of SW Radio Africa, which is the independent voice of Zimbabwe. We broadcast from the UK because independent radio is not allowed in our country.
The first thing I'd like to do, I thought to myself, is get a picture of SW Radio Africa. Who works there? I asked Jerry. Are you all from Zimbabwe?
Yes, all the staff are Zimbabwean except our webmaster, but he's married to a Zimbabwean, so that's why we allow him to be with us.
Are you allowed back into the country?
No. We're on a banned list. I'm particularly on the banned list because I challenged the Zimbabwe government's monopoly of the broadcasting situation in Zimbabwe in 2000 and won the right to set up the first independent radio station there. But the government closed it down at gunpoint after 6 days, and I had to go into hiding for a while. So that was really the impetus to come over here and set this up.
I was clearly talking to a brave and motivated woman. I asked her to tell me more about what brought about the founding of SW Radio Africa.
As I said, in 2000, I took the Zimbabwe government to the Supreme Court to challenge their broadcasting monopoly and won the right to set up Capital Radio, which was going to be the country's first independent FM radio station. But we were still doing test signals when they shut it down after 6 days at gunpoint, and they seized the equipment and they seized the transmitter, and I was advised to go into hiding by the lawyers. And it became clear from that that independent radio was not going to be allowed. Mugabe had actually used his presidential powers to overturn the Supreme Court ruling. And in fact, a case around this continues at the African Union Commission on Human Rights. Article 19 have helped me put a case together to challenge the unconstitutionality of that closure. But that was very clear that we were never going to be allowed to broadcast in Zimbabwe, so I looked around at alternatives, and the alternative was to leave, sadly. There was no other choice. And so SW Radio Africa began broadcasting on the 19th of December 2001.
You left, obviously leaving your family and your friends behind, and you've never been able to go back.
That's correct, and sadly that's true for a quarter of the Zimbabwe population. There's an estimated 4 or 5 million Zimbabweans out of the country. There's 11 million in country. And our whole community has been scattered. And this has a profound effect on people, and I'm only now beginning to realize what the word exile means, and it's a breakdown of your community and your society and your support systems, and it makes it very hard.
Now, I read the news every day, and more often than not, I'm forced to look for news on Zimbabwe in the back and most definitely out-of-sight pages. I have the feeling that notwithstanding the dramatic ongoing situation there, Zimbabwe is rather forgotten by the rest of the world. I asked Jerry if she thinks that's true.
To a certain extent, I mean, it's very much in the public eye at the moment on British television. People have been sneaking in and with hidden cameras getting pictures out. It's a bit like the North Korean situation. It's very difficult. And it's the visuals that tell the story. And there have been few visuals coming out of Zimbabwe, and deliberately Mugabe, you know, clamped down on the media, the international media, and you're beaten if you pick up a camera. Even the BBC is not allowed to operate in Zimbabwe. And it's a country of just simmering misery, so you haven't got the great dramatic bombs going off that television seems to love. It's just profound, tragic human misery, and that's not a daily news story.
Jerry, getting back to the radio, what is your mission?
Our mission, sounds like a TV series, is to try and keep Zimbabweans fully informed of the situation. They are misled by the propaganda in the government media on a daily basis, and it's pretty wicked and evil propaganda. It tries to stir up a lot of racism, a lot of tribalism. If you're not on the side of the ruling party, then you deserve to be beaten. There's a lot of hate speech that comes out in the media and perpetrated by Mugabe himself and all his top echelon. So we try and counteract that, and we try and bring some hope to Zimbabweans, because there's nothing worse than to lose hope. Then you can't carry on, and Zimbabwe has to carry on. And there are many people there who can't do anything, who can't leave, don't have a passport, don't have the money, they're stuck. They have to carry on, so we try and give them some hope. And we try and inform them, because I think as long as you feel you know what's going on, that's got to be a lot better than the terrible rumours that tend to go around in Zimbabwe.
It must be hard to work so far away. I mean, do you really know who you're getting through to? Do you ever get any feedback? Don't you feel isolated and maybe sometimes very fatigued by the situation?
I suppose we are slightly isolated, but we do actually know more about what's going on the ground on a daily basis than Zimbabweans do. And it's like deja vu, because that was true of the Rhodesian days. The international media knew more about the situation in Rhodesia than the people living there. And 30 years on, it hasn't changed. And Zimbabweans have become like their own correspondents. So we get a lot of feedback. We're on the phone to Zimbabwe all the day. We get, with the internet now, we get emails all day. And the new media has been an interesting way to try and get more and more information backwards and forwards. We started recently an SMS text service, so we send news headlines into Zimbabwe by mobile phone as well every single day. So I don't think we're that isolated. It's a bit of a lonely cause, and sometimes the stories are very depressing, and it's quite hard to maintain your sense of humor when you're just focused on such daily tragedies.
Looking at your webpage, I see you recently featured a report on the Archbishop of York calling on Britain to take action against Mugabe. And you also mentioned to me that your radio has a religious program. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yes, well, we're very fortunate in that our webmaster is a theologian, and he runs our religious program on Sundays. And it was hugely welcomed, because there hasn't been a proper religious program on state media in Zimbabwe for many, many years. And people, it's a very Christian country. A lot of people go to church, and they really welcome this program. So it's a very interesting program for our webmaster to do. And a lot of key issues are being raised through the church. And the church has been unbelievably supportive to ordinary Zimbabweans. If it wasn't for the churches, people would be in a much, much more sorrowful and sadder state. There's been huge support. There's a Methodist church in South Africa. It's one of the few areas where Zimbabwean refugees can go for refuge. And there are 3 million Zimbabweans in South Africa, many of them living very, very badly.
At the risk of sounding banal, as we spoke of such an all-embracing situation of misery, I couldn't help but ask Jerry what her own hopes are for the future.
I really do feel that these are the first steps on the road to democracy. There has never been democracy in Zimbabwe. What we are trying to do is get Zimbabweans to think, to open their minds, to free their minds, because the government controls their minds, so that they can look forward and they can say, we're not going to allow this type of government ever again. And so there is going to be an end to Robert Mugabe's rule. He's 83 years old, and no one lives forever. So things will change, And we can only hope that what's happened in Zimbabwe has been such a tragic, awful lesson that people will ensure that it won't happen again. And that's what I'm hoping for, and I'm hoping that that's going to happen sooner rather than later.
Our conversation had come to an end, and I wish Jerry all the luck in the world. Is there anything, I asked as an afterthought, ordinary people can do to help?
Well, I think it wouldn't hurt if people would pray for Zimbabwe. It is such a sad situation, and the individual stories are not coming out, so you just have this sort of group feeling of misery. And it's the individual stories that are so sad and so tragic, and there's individually amazing bravery. Grandmothers trying to support dozens of HIV orphans and just struggling along. And so if people could pray for Zimbabwe, that would be very good.
That's all from me, Linda Bordoni, and from the English feature program today. But we'll be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programs on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. And of course, we would love to hear from you with any comments or suggestions you may have. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English program. Laudetur Jesus Christus.